Okay, you ready?
You're listening to Design Yourself, a podcast to help you figure out what it is that you want and then make it happen. I'm Sharon Lepofsky. Don't you forget, this is my life and it's gonna
be good. Don't you know? Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 45 of Design Yourself. I am your host, Sharon. And today I'm really excited to share with you all, dear listeners, something I have been thinking a lot about lately. And this is the idea that it's okay to do the things that we love. And in doing the things that we love, it's okay to let go of the things that we don't love. Not just in our personal lives, not just in our physical built environments, but in our work lives as well. Now, if you all have listened to the show before, you have heard me talk about Marie Kondo. She is the best-selling author and organizational consultant. The book that you will likely have heard of is her very first book, which she has kind of iterations and offshoots of now. But that first book is The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which is all about the Japanese art of decluttering and organizing. Now, with this book, she lays out what she calls the KonMari method of decluttering that ties into Japanese values. And at its core, this approach focuses on surrounding yourself only with things that bring you joy. And if you listened to last week's episode, you heard how Colin, my husband, and I have been going through this process in our own home such that our children, our 2-year-old and 4-year-old, have now started parroting the core question that this method in Marie Kondo invites us to ask, which is, does this bring me joy? And last week I was teasing myself about the fact that my 2-year-old has now been asking himself this question, or kind of saying out loud, like, oh, this brings me joy, when he's playing with his trucks. Now, Colin corrected me. So let the record show that my 4-year-old daughter, when she went through a pile of books that actually belonged to Colin and I, she did not, as I reported last week, say, this does not bring me joy. What she said was actually, I don't like this. And then she would toss our book into the discard pile, much to Colin's dismay, because we didn't realize she'd been doing this. So she'd taken a ton of books we hadn't yet reviewed and tossed them over there. The reason I'm bringing this story back up to make this distinction of what Henrietta, our 4-year-old, was saying is, I don't like this, which I think is such a simple and direct way, kind of getting outside of the Marie Kondo language of, does this bring me joy? Does this not bring me joy? It's just simply like, do I like this or do I not like this? And when she was looking at these art history and literary theory and very dry, pictureless books, she said to herself, I don't like this. So I'm going to talk about why, and no matter what the language is that you feel comfortable with, and maybe it is the, you know, Marie Kondo, does this bring me joy? It's clearly been working for millions and millions of people, including me and my husband. But I'm going to talk to you about how you can really pick the language that works for you, because ultimately what we're getting at here is today, in your work, in the businesses that you're building, that you're leading, that you're running, do I like this? Do I not like this? And how do you let that help you focus your efforts? Because at the end of the day, when we focus, we see much stronger results. And when we don't focus, we start to wear ourselves thin. We, even when we have, you know, global corporations, right? So we have tons and tons of people behind the efforts that we're working on. When we don't focus, we don't produce as strong a product or as meaningful, impactful a service experience. So we're going to get into that, and we're going to use Marie Kondo to help guide us. So let's remember, she has, you know, books that go through all of this. I've got, you know, 30 minutes or so on this podcast, so this will be an accelerated lesson. But I think you guys will really see how some of what she lays out there, how it can apply to how we think about our businesses. So the first place I wanted to start, just for those of you who have not read her book, or maybe it's been a little while, just to give you a crash course in the five key areas for how she organizes the book, because I think it tells you a lot about what her philosophy is like. So here those are just in quick order, and then I'll say a little bit about each of them. So she organizes the life-changing magic of tidying up this way. First, she asks the question, why can't I keep my house in order? Then she talks about finish discarding first. So you've got to get rid of stuff before you, before anything else. Then category three is tidying by category works like magic. So now that you've discarded the stuff that doesn't bring you joy, you can start organizing or tidying, as she says, by category. Her area four is storing your things to make your life shine. And then finally, she talks at the end in her category five about the magic of tidying dramatically transforms your life. So here's some headlines on how I see this translating. She's really focused on your physical environment, right? The personal life, looking in the domain of your home. And what I want to be thinking about is a little bit more abstract, but it's how we organize in work. And so, but I think a lot of what she's saying really applies. So first, why can't I keep my house in order? This is what she's talking about here is the fact that most of us haven't been taught how to clean. You know, we don't actually really know how to organize our stuff. What we know how to do is accumulate it. And one of the things that she says that I remember when I read it, I was like, whoa, this is me. She talks about how people who are great organizers are actually hoarders in disguise. And I'd always prided myself on being a really great organizer. And then I started to realize she's right. By being a great organizer, I wasn't forcing myself to go through the process of saying, is this actually something that I need? Like, does this bring me joy anymore? Is this an object that I want to have in my space? And I wasn't forced to ask that question because I was able to really make sure I knew how to, you know, get it into a, you know, floor to ceiling shelving system I had installed, or in that great new Tupperware bin that I could hide away for the winter months, whatever it was. But I was able to put it away and therefore not have to think about it. And so I think the main thing here that I want to say of how does this apply to your businesses, right? The work lives that you're leading, is the same thing applies. We are taught how to pick things up, to maybe take on a new product venture, to launch a whole new business, right? Those are things that we tend to learn. What we focus less on is when do we actually let things go? When do we put them down? And there's a distinction around the type of learning that happens when we are adding things. So intellectual learning is what happens when we are picking up something new, whether it's a new class, a new skill, a hobby, a friendship, relationship. All of those new things require intellectual learning. And by the way, we're trained to be great, great intellectual learners the whole time that we're going through our schooling system. So we tend to be pretty comfortable in that domain. We've been growing up with that our whole lives. However, to put something down, to let go of something, that requires emotional learning, because it's actually at there's something emotional that's happening when we're saying no, when we're saying not anymore. And so what we have to do if we're going to be good at focusing in our business and in our work lives is we have to actually start learning how to put things down. And that requires that emotional learning. So I want to say, you know, why can't we keep our work lives, our businesses focused? That's why, because we have not been trained to do so. On finish discarding first, where she's talking all about how to go through the process of, you know, discarding all your items all at once, intensely and completely. You know, she's a real advocate for
you know, her method is you must do this all at once. And that doesn't mean you can maybe go through your whole house in a single day, but pick that weekend, pick that week, get it done. Don't drag it on, because her belief is, in what she has seen working with many different clients, is you lose momentum and ultimately get dragged out if you don't get it done all at once. Now, I will admit that my husband and I have not been so great at getting it all done at once in this season of our lives, but we've really have paid attention to, do we still have energy in this? And that has felt good to us. So we have been okay with that. But I like this idea of discarding first before you start adding. So don't, in the home setting, don't, you know, get rid of all the pants you don't like and then start organizing the pants that are still there. Like, go through all the clothes, discard everything there before you start putting them away. So you have to finish getting rid of first before you start trying to get into the phase of organizing and putting things away. What, from a work setting, I like this as well, because you really want to get clear before you start planning that new, how you're going to launch this new product, or how you're going to double down on your editorial focus, or get out there and do new marketing tied to the thing that you're really excited about. You have to first really say, what am I not going to be doing anymore? And we'll talk in a little bit about, you know, the importance of auditing everything that you're focused on and how you can do that. But I think that's the point. You want to make sure that you really have done that audit and said what you're letting go of and done that letting go before you start trying to dive deep into the things that still remain. Now, once you have discarded, quote unquote, then you can get into her category three, right? Tidying by category works like magic. And in this sense, I think for work, we can really think maybe it is that you have products, maybe you have services, whatever those things are in your that you focus on in your business, you really want to make sure that you are bucketing them out by category in order to audit and say, okay, how am I going to put these back together? So you want to organize it that way. From a home sense, these are things like you going through your clothing, then you want to look at your, then she has you look at books. Then from books, you can look at papers. Then you can get into miscellaneous items. So those can be things like things that you just keep because you love them, and things that are stuck in your wallet, like, and often sentimental items. So she has photos would follow into this category, but she takes you kind of through these different categories. Each person's business could break out into different services that way. Like, I know in my own work, I can look at things like, okay, I might bucket things out by coaching, by the kind of strategy engagements that we focus on at Point Road, by the retreats that we offer, right? So you can bucket them out in the categories that make sense for you and really make sure that you are organizing them that way. So then she has this category, as I said, storing your things to make your life shine. And, you know, what I would say here is how we organize things does matter. A lot of times the way that we're organizing our work is digitally, whether you have your Google Drive or, a dedicated server, however you're keeping things that way with our emails. Do you file things? Are you, letting things go? But oftentimes we either have filing systems that are so intricate that it's not intuitive for other people to kind of tap in and use them. And sometimes even for ourselves, I will admit, like with my emails, I used to save like every single email that came in, like, I might need this sometime. And as a result, when I actually needed an email, I wouldn't be able to find it, because there would be so much that was still there. I had all the back and forth on every single thing. And I would end up doing what I called out file foldering myself digitally because I could no longer find it. At the time that I needed it. So you really want to think about how you're storing things both digitally and then also physically. Like our built environments do make a big impact on how we are seeing and taking things in. So you want to make sure that once you have gone through, okay, I've discarded the things I don't need in my business. I've figured out how to organize them. And now I'm actually making sure that the way that I'm organizing them allows them to shine through. And I'll give you one specific thing that Marie Kondo does and invite you to think about, if I were to apply that to my business, what might that look like? And one of the things that she says is to empty your bag every day. So ladies and gentlemen, this means like you bring your purse or your merce home, and literally every single item comes out of it. And she has very much in the Japanese value that you thank the purse. For example, for me, like I thank my purse for how hard it's worked that day. My purse works real hard. And that's one of the reasons you let everything out of it. It also means that you don't just accumulate stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, you may know what I'm talking about for those bags that you carry around on a regular basis that when you do happen to go through it months and months later, there's like, you know, some random thing that you forgot even existed in there. There's extra receipts, there's coins, you know, you don't have that happen. And you actually have a spot for where that stuff goes at home. And that little strategy in the physical environment really worked well for me. And the way I've translated that for myself at work is to make sure that I clear off my desk at the end of the day. And then I make sure those things that accumulate on the top of my desk as I'm going through my workday, that they have a place. Because it's not that I want to file them all away in some place where I have to come, like go into 10 different spots when I start the next day to pull them back out. But I have a place where I can put that to give my desk a rest. I think you want to make sure that you're letting the things that are working hard for you, whether it's your Google Drive or your desktop, that you're really thinking about how you can give them a rest, make them beautiful, let them shine. And the last category, as I said, that she goes through is all about how the magic of tidying dramatically transforms your life. And I just want to say that this is so true in our work lives. And I think of this as kind of the core of what I see myself doing in the service work I do with clients, whether it is coaching or facilitations, retreats, that when you can focus in on being really intentional about where your efforts have been spent, you will see a dramatic increase in the effectiveness of how you're leading and the results in turn that you're getting. So when you can focus in and be really intentional about where you're spending your efforts, you will see your business transform. So I'm completely aligned with her thoughts there. Okay, so that's kind of the very crash course. I'm not taking through each point, but of the big bucket areas that she's putting out there in the life-changing magic of tidying up. And where I want to go now is just to give a couple of the problems that I see show up really commonly in business for why we might not be doing this Marie Kondo, quote unquote, kind of approach to our work. And then I want to get into a few simple steps that if you were going to go through and apply this approach in your business, what are those five steps that I would recommend you take? Okay, so here's first some of the problems that I see happening. So why don't we naturally follow this approach? Well, I think what's happening and the problem that I see in many different kinds of variations, but it really comes down at its core, is that we are scattering our efforts. And the cost that we have when we're doing that is that we're not making anything really great. We're doing a lot of things, hopefully well, sometimes we're doing a lot of things and so one thing's going okay and several other things are really, you know, going down the tubes. But you know, you, that spreading of efforts has a cost. And we're doing it over and over and over again that way, which has a cost on us because we're never feeling like we're getting to that achievement level that we'd like to see for our business. And that itself has its own toll on us. So I don't think it comes from a bad place. You know, one of the reasons I see that we spread our efforts so far is that we might be risk averse. You know, we want to place a lot of bets because we're nervous about something failing. And that can be in a, you know, personal business where it's a, you know, solopreneur out there. And that can be in Fortune 50 companies that I've worked with. So I see it, it's not about, you know, the passion project that a single person is doing and that kind of work versus global corporation. Everybody falls into this same trap that we want the possibility of succeeding and we feel like more is more. And I'm here to say more is not better. It's just that you're actually taking on more, and the cost of that is that you can't really focus in. Sometimes we also, and this I do see more often with solopreneurs, although it does happen in bigger organizations as well, but where we're just not ready to make the decision about where to focus. You know, we just want extra time to kind of be in a play space. I think the reason I see this show up more with solopreneurs than inside of larger organizations is that larger organizations, there's usually some kind of hierarchy to audit where the focus is, to varying degrees for sure. But that hierarchy and decision-making process usually prevents people from being allowed to spin their wheels for too long. Solopreneurs, it's often the case that they've gotten into they've launched this business because it's something that really comes from their own heart that they want to pursue, that they're so excited about. And I would say for myself that when I started out over 5 years ago in coaching, that I didn't want to, you know, people would say, well, who is your ideal client? Who are the type of people that you're working with? And to me, answering that question was so limiting, both because I didn't know, and I didn't want to lay a stake in the ground and decide. You know, today I know that my ideal clients are people who want to focus on how to lead a well-designed life. And that there are lots of variations on that, but the focus for me is really clear. And I think the thing is that for a lot of solopreneurs, that desire not to lay the stake in the ground prevents you from getting to that focus. Now, I eventually got to that focus from the experience of keeping things broad, and I wouldn't go back and change that. The problem is that we may come to a place by keeping things broad that we start to see what the thing is that we really love, but we don't go back and then start saying no to the rest of it because we've done that before, because we can do that. You know, because I can help, right? These are things I commonly hear for why people don't start to take out the let's call it excess, the things that are not part of that focus that they really want to have. So the thing you have to catch, and we'll talk about this when we get to those steps, is that I think it can be okay not to focus, but then we have to make sure that once we get to that focus, that we actually let go of the rest. And that gets back to that emotional learning that it's not always intuitive. We're not always great about doing that, going back and saying, and now I'm going to put this thing down. Because we have the momentum of we've been doing it. We are often good at it. We've seen success in it. Like all those things keep us from then letting go. So, you know, it doesn't come from a bad place. Those are some of the reasons that we see this kind of collecting and accumulating show up. Here's why we've got to focus. We do have natural limitations. So two things I want you to be really clear on, because I think this is really poignant for work in particular. First, multitasking does not exist. It does not exist, people. There is only single tasking. What multitasking is it's moving really quickly from one thing to the next thing. So all of you who are like, I'm great at multitasking and doing many things at once, you are not great at doing many things at once. What you're doing is you're really adept at moving from one thing to another thing, to another thing, to another thing, to another thing really quickly. But what happens when we do that is that we waste time, and there's neurological studies that show even when it's something as simple as the human brain processing the difference between numbers that are different colors, like there is a pause that happens in our brains just to shift from, okay, I'm seeing red and now I'm seeing green. And that for something like that, for most of us, it's a really small pause. But the more and more things that we're adding in, the pauses get longer, the brain has to process more, and we waste time. We are not as productive. So actually, to be really productive, what we need to do is single task, really stick with something from start to finish, and then go to the next thing. And so you can see that if in your business, you have so many things that you're focused on, 20 things throughout the day, think about the cost of all that transition. We lose a lot of time. We lose a lot of productivity by focusing on many things because multitasking does not exist. So that's one reason I want to make sure that you're clear that this is really important. And why it is. The other thing is that we can't actually remember more than four things in our head at once. This is another one of those scientifically proven facts. We can't remember more than four things at once. Now, there are some extreme circumstances and big events that happen in the world where people can remember more things. So can we get better at this and increase our capacity? Yes. But your average person, most of us, and I can raise my hand and say, I am right there with it because I've been just noticing for myself, assuredly I can hold more than four things, but I certainly can't. Once we get past the number is usually four. Once we get past that number, we just start forgetting things, which is why we have to have those to-do lists and ways of tracking. And you can listen to episode 44 if you want to hear more about ways that you can do that. But if our to-do list gets so complex, and we have so many things that we're tracking because we can't hold more than four things in our head at once, again, we just find ourselves getting defeated because we can never catch up and get things done. Now, I don't know about you, but I myself can say I have definitely had that feeling on more than one occasion that like the list is impossibly long. Well, sometimes the list is actually impossibly long. And this is something that I'll get in with clients from time to time when they're feeling overwhelmed by what's on their plates. And we actually have to like go through and say, is it feasible? And you cannot believe how many times I've had somebody lay out like write out for me a week in the life and write it out by time. Like where are you? What are you doing in 15-minute increments? And the weeks that they're trying to achieve when they do it that way, they realize are just physically impossible. So we can't hold more than four things in our head at once. We can't create more than 24 hours in a day. So we do have these natural limitations. So let me move in now before we close to five steps that I think will help you Marie Kondo your business. So taking all of what we have learned. Step one for me is to really name the thing that motivates you. So Marie Kondo, she is kind of having this built-in Japanese value that joy would be the thing that we're after. And what I found is people value when they get really intentional about the thing that they choose. For you, it may be joy. Like maybe having joy in your life really motivates you. And if you're feeling stuck on answering this question, use joy because 7 million people have been reading the book and using it and it has worked. And let me offer you some other common ones that might show up. And the thing that I want you to focus on that's motivating you is I do want it to be an emotion. In this instance. So I don't want you to talk about like that, dream house or a certain amount of money, like really focus on the emotion, that feeling you want to have that motivates you. And these things usually tend to be things like joy, happiness, peace, a feeling of fulfillment. So name for you first the thing that motivates you. And let this shape your guiding question. So if you find that that the thing that you're after is fulfillment, then your question would not be, does this bring me joy? Your question would be, does this bring me fulfillment? Does this bring me peace? Does this bring me happiness? Right? So really name the thing that motivates you and let that shape your guiding question. Step two is to get really clear on what you want to do in your business. And some questions you might think about here is like, what one thing do you really want to focus on? And maybe if you're feeling overwhelmed by that as tied to like, in my whole life, what am I going to do in work, this one thing? Like ask about in this season, like in 2017, what's the one thing I want to accomplish in my business? Between now and 2021, what's that one thing I want to accomplish? And if you do feel comfortable, and I would challenge you play with this, right, to set your horizon for the longer term, you might shape this question something more along the lines of like, what do you want to be known for? What's the legacy that you want to leave? Those kinds of questions are going to help you get at that same idea, but in the longer term. And then it can be nice, so kind of fun homework assignment if you're into this, is to consider your baseline. And for that, you might ask, what's my reputation right now? What's my business's reputation right now? And compare that to what you want to be known for. And that's your gap analysis, right? Here's where I am. What's my current reputation? What do I want to be known for? That's my true north. That's where I'm headed. And that can help guide you towards the action of how you get there in terms of streamlining, focusing in. Fun little story, and I'll be quick here, is from Apple. So I don't know if any of you have done the Apple case study through Harvard Business School, but I had a chance to participate in this case study before. And one of the things, what this case study went through was looking at all the CEOs, starting with Steve Jobs as founder. But then for those of you who don't know, he was famously fired from Apple. There were a couple other CEOs that came in, and then they brought him back. And of course, we all today know what a powerhouse he was up until his death in driving Apple into the future at that point. And the CEO who preceded Jobs when he returned, he had this quote that he said, you know, kind of go follow the market. Like, where should we focus? Well, hear what our customers are saying to us. And like, let's go do that. And I remember at the time when I heard this in the case study, I thought, oh my gosh, I was inside of an organization at the time. We were participating in this case study together. And I thought, yes, as the marketing executive and sales executive on our team, like this is what we're doing. We're listening to what our prospective clients are telling us they want, and then we're trying to shape a product to do that. And what Jobs did when he came back to Apple in 97 was he really focused. He took the opposite approach of rather than, hey, what's anything that clients are telling us? Let's run towards it. Let's try that, land that, and that, and that, and that, and that. But he focused. He brought a ton of rigor and focus. One of the ways that he did this was at this point, there were dozens of different versions, like a dozen different versions of the Macintosh computer. And so he said, forget that. He did a quick grid, 2x2. And he said, on one side, there's consumer and then there's pro. And on the other side of the 2x2, there was desktop and portable. And he said, I want you to focus on the one best version in each of these four categories. So a consumer desktop and a consumer portable, a pro desktop and a pro portable, and that's it. He would also famously have annual retreats where people would, and there would just be a really streamlined group of about 100 people who would get invited to these retreats. And all of these people would like really push and push and push to get to get their ideas listed. And what they focused on in this retreat was, which was developing the top 10 best ideas for where Apple could focus. And after they finally would develop this top 10, he would then cross off the bottom 7 and say, we can only do 3 things. That's what it looks like to focus. So you really, and to be able to do that, you've got to know what it is that you want to be known for, what it is that you really want to be focused on. So step 3 is to audit your current focus. So this is where you actually want to list out everything that you have on offer, all the services, all the products. And Marie Kondo would tell you to put them all on the floor, literally, like your books come off the shelf and onto the floor, your clothes come out of the closet and onto the floor. This helps having to take it out of its context and to put it in a, but also to have it be something physical in front of you. And I would invite you to do this with your business. So maybe what you have are products and you can physically put them in front of you. If you are a board game developer, you have the board games that you can put out in front of you. If you have services, write them out on, you know, use pen and paper and create something physical to represent them so that you can look at each thing in turn. Now, if you are part of a larger organization that has multiple divisions and arms and departments, you want to think about how you can bucket those things. So if your list is, let's say, more than 10, make sure that you're starting to bucket. And then maybe you take, rather than doing them all at once, maybe you say, okay, I'm going to take this division and this, then this division and that division. But what you want to do for all of them is to get list out everything that's there. And then you can get into step 4. So once you've audited your current focus, you've really captured, okay, here's everything that I'm focused on, which sometimes just that act, usually what it elicits when I do this with someone is that they look at it and they're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot when I look at it. But I'm not usually looking at it all together this way. So I've never noticed how much it is. That must be why I'm so tired. So you want to audit your current focus. And then you can go into step 4. And this is where you use that guiding question that you got out of step 1 of naming the thing that motivates you. And let's just assume for now, we'll use Marie Kondo's word. Let's assume that your thing was joy. What you do in step 4 is determine what brings you joy. This is where you want to pick up each of those things that you have audited in that third step and ask yourself now, does this bring me joy? Right? Or does this bring me fulfillment? And I want you to just notice your answer to each of the, to each question for each thing and notice it without judgment, right? Just allow those things to flow, right? Don't try and get into like, but here's why I can't let it go. Or, wow, I'm so excited. This does bring me joy. Here's all the ways I could market it newly if I'm focusing. All I want you to do in this step is just to get that yes or no, right? And really push yourself not to like, well, it kind of brings me joy. It brings me somewhat fulfillment. Like, does it bring you joy? Yes. Or no. And if you're feeling really stuck on this, you're like, I don't know if it brings me joy. It's work. Nothing brings me joy. Find something that does bring you joy. And I don't care if it's your favorite book or a picture, but like tap into something that really does bring you joy to like elicit this feeling. And I'm telling you, all of you have this capacity. Like you can do this. Find that thing that brings you joy and then come back to the process. It's usually not a great thing to go through if you're already in a bad mood. When Colin and I were going through their books, there were a couple of times where I was just like, the way that we're talking about this is not bringing me joy. So now none of these books are bringing me joy. I need to walk away. I'm like, I know that this is my favorite book and I'm about to discard it because I think I'm carrying something else into this review. So make sure that you're coming in open, relaxed. If you're feeling stuck on finding something that brings you joy, find a thing, doesn't have to be related to work, so you can kind of elicit that to know like, ah, this is like the spark and feeling I'm looking for. But ultimately, I want you to go through and determine what it is that brings you joy or fill in the blank of whatever that thing is that you've decided in step 1 motivates you. So you're going to find those yeses and nos, move things into those piles. And then finally, step 5 is to let go of the no's. And I could I'm sure I could develop many series of podcasts just to how do we do this? Because like I said, it's the emotional learning of actually being able to let go of something. But I will give you my very best powerful tip that's most simple for how to do that. And that's to cultivate the emotion that you think is going to serve you in letting go. So you want to ask yourself, well, in order, like you finished step four, now you've got the things in front of you that you know you need to let go of. And when you look at that, just ask yourself, what emotion is going to serve me in letting go of these things? And quiet your mind, put yourself in a space, put both feet flat on the ground, maybe flip your palms up into a receiving posture, but you will know what the emotion is that best serves you. Might be courage, maybe it's boldness, maybe it's sassiness, whatever, it's all good, but figure out what that emotion is and then ask yourself, what things can I do to cultivate that emotion? Right? Maybe you need courage and going to hike every weekend is going to help you do that. Maybe you need sassiness and reading that book about that sassy lady that you love is going to help you do that. Whatever. But allow yourself to actively strengthen that emotion, and that's going to help you to actually go through the letting go of the no's. By the way, if you get to your yeses and no's and you find that, that you've still got 25 things in your yes pile, consider Steve Jobs in his list of 10 and how he eliminated the bottom 7, right? I would challenge you to get to one thing. I'm challenging myself always to get to one thing. Not saying I'm always perfect at it. I'm definitely not. But the challenge of getting to one, I think, results in maybe you get to that 1, 2, or 3, and then you can drive focus. Then you can move towards excellence. You can see your productivity spike, all of those things that you want. And by the way, you can be doing the things that you freaking love. So you're not like Henrietta tossing the literary criticism into the pile saying, I don't like this, right? You want the feeling of like, I love this when you're working, because we spend a lot of time there and life's too short to be spending a lot of time doing things that we don't like. Last thing that I want to say here is that function is its own form of joy, happiness, fulfillment. So I am not here to suggest that you can in your work just eliminate everything that you don't like responding to emails or whatever. Like, I'm not saying that you can get rid of all the tasks that you've ever not wanted to do. But you do want to think about, is the thing that I'm executing here in service to those very few, that thing or those very few things that I've identified that I'm focusing on? And does it function in the most effective way to get me there? Well, then that it's serving that function. That's its beauty, right? That's what can bring you joy. It's moving you towards that thing. So you do actually have to do the work. You do have to put in the effort. And that will include usually some things that are not on our fantasy list of how we spend our time. But you can appreciate them for how they offer you function. The same way that Marie Kondo would say, maybe you don't toss away all the hammers in your house because you want to make sure that you have something to nail, to put the nail in to hang the picture. But you certainly don't need 10 of those hammers, and you can keep the hammer that makes you most happy and most effective. And she even uses this as an example. If you have a frying pan that works just as well as your hammer, and that having that frying pan serve that function brings you joy, then go ahead and get rid of the hammer, but make sure you can still serve the function. And I would certainly say the same thing applies into our work lives. All right. That is what I wanted to share with you all today. Thank you so much for listening. If you are interested in learning more about what I do or dropping me a direct line, you can do so over at pointroadstudios.com. And while you are there, look for the green box to subscribe to our online community. This is where you can get things like show notes for the podcast delivered right to your inbox, blog posts, special updates, like when I announced recently who won a poster giveaway that we did. And then I would also ask, if you like the show, if you're a fan, help me get the word out there about it. That can be, you might just tell your friend. So that could be in a one-on-one conversation. Maybe you post on social media. I've had some fun updates come my way on Instagram and Twitter in the last week. Thank you all for tagging me in those. You might post on your neighborhood listserv, but think about who are people or groups that you think would be positively impacted by this work and help me let them know about it. That kind of organic growth just feels right where things are supposed to be for the show right now. And then the other thing that would be awesome to help spread the word is subscribe to the podcast, write a written review. You can really listen to the podcast wherever they're happening. A lot of people are heading over to places like Apple Music. Did you know that iTunes is actually not the name of it anymore? It's Apple Music. I've learned that recently. So you can head over to Apple Music and write us a review there. I read all the reviews. It's super helpful. I appreciate the feedback. So thank you for that. And if you've got questions or ideas for future shows, let me know about them. I'm always super open. You can find me on social media. You can do this through the website or just search us under Point Road Studios at places like Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So follow along, have fun, join the community, let others know. Thank you as ever for listening. I am wishing each of you a most beautiful week as you step through your weeks. And until next Monday, remember, there is nothing stopping you. So go on ahead and get after whatever it is that you really want.